from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. When Republicans' big summer push on health care collapsed, things got testy between Donald Trump and Senate GOP leader Mitch McConnell, sniping, finger-pointing. Then came Charlottesville and prominent Republicans saying, "Come on, Mr. President, speak up." This hour on Point, Donald Trump and the GOP. Is there a rift here big enough to matter? You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Who is the Republican Party now? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Sunday, lots of people wondering, where's the president? What more might he say? Why did he only say that on Saturday about the events in Charlottesville? Here was Colorado Republican Senator Cory Gardner. He was all over the place. He was calling on all elected officials, but including the president, to stand up to white supremacists and other hate groups. They shouldn't be in our base, he says here on CNN's State of the Union.
They're part of hatred. They're part of bigotry. They're part of evil. And we need to stand up to that. And so whether it's the president of the United States, a senator from any of our great 50 states around the country, or our city councils and mayors, school teachers, call it for what it is. It's hatred. It's bigotry. We don't want them in our base. They shouldn't be in a base. They shouldn't be claimed as part of a base. And it has to be made crystal clear.
They have been part of Donald Trump's base. Yesterday, under pressure, the president stepped up and said this from the White House.
Racism is evil. And those who cause violence in its name are criminals and thugs, including the KKK, neo-Nazis, white supremacists, and other hate groups that are repugnant to everything we hold dear as Americans. We are a nation founded on the truth that all of us are created equal.
Let's look at the president and the GOP. Joining me first from Washington is Eliana Johnson, national political reporter for Politico. Eliana, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
So here we were. It looks like small potatoes now, but not that small. Mitch McConnell and the president trading barbs over the failure of the healthcare push this summer. And then Charlottesville comes, and there was this great unease of a weekend where you had any number of Republicans saying, "Let's hear more, Mr. President." Is there, and all along, we know that the Republican establishment was not in Donald Trump's corner until he just took the nomination, they lined up. Is there a rift here or not, Eliana?
Of course there's a rift. You know, if the Republican Party had been institutionally strong, Donald Trump would never have been the nominee. The nominee would have been Jeb Bush. But I think the Republican Party, it's difficult to know what you're talking about when you refer to it. Are you talking about Donald Trump, who is the president and the putative leader of the party? Or are you talking about Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan? It's really difficult to know what you're talking about. But I do think you're seeing an increasing distance between Donald Trump and Republican leaders in Congress and elsewhere. It began, I think, with John McCain's vote against the healthcare bill. And then you saw Trump attacking Mitch McConnell repeatedly. They have a very contentious relationship. And then you saw his reaction to Charlottesville. And it's important to note, I think the president had a written statement on Saturday that was similar in tone and in substance to the one he ultimately delivered on Monday. But he ad-libbed and condemned the violence on many sides, which made a lot of people angry, and they thought it was overly vague and equivocal and, upset his aides. And you saw, I think, most importantly, Cory Gardner, who's the head of the National Republican Senatorial Committee, was one of the first out of the gate to condemn him. And the reason I think that's significant is that he is in charge of electing and reelecting Republicans to the Senate in 2018. And we saw the president's approval rating dip to a low for this administration of 34%. I think as the president's approval rating dips lower, I suspect we'll see some lower numbers in the wake of this Charlottesville fiasco. Republicans more and more beginning to distance themselves from this president.
But does it matter? I mean, in the first 6 months of this presidency, what we heard was many Republicans might not be entirely comfortable with Donald Trump, but they see the support that he garnered in the election, and they have an agenda they want to push through, and they were, maybe are, willing to work with this president in the interest of that agenda on health care, on taxes in particular, and more. Are they still in the grin and bear it mode?
You know, I think as you see the president's approval rating, if it dips to below 34%, 32, 33, 31, the high 20s, they are not going to want to tie themselves to this president. But what I do think is going to be interesting to watch is the relationship between the president and Mitch McConnell, because neither one of them really can have success without the other. Their relationship is terrible. You know, Leader McConnell really thinks Trump is an idiot and is going to do his own thing regardless of the efforts he makes. And Trump thinks McConnell is somebody who can't get things done. But their success really is dependent on one another. And it will be really interesting, I think, to track that.
Let's listen just to that as we come up to Charlottesville and what that might mean. But this was just last week, and you had the Senate Majority Leader. He was home in Kentucky talking at a local Rotary group. Pretty modest setting, but the words echoed in Washington. Here he was talking about President Trump's unrealistic expectations.
Our new president had, of course, not been in this line of work before, and I think had excessive expectations about how quickly things happen in the democratic process.
Okay, the president punches back, and he did, pretty quick. This was 2 days later. He was in New Jersey, and he criticized McConnell for the Senate's failure to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act.
They said, Mitch, get to work and let's get it done. They should have had this last one done. They lost by one vote. For a thing like that to happen is a disgrace. And frankly, it shouldn't have happened. That I can tell you.
A disgrace, says the president. And then you got conservative commentators coming in. Here was Lou Dobbs on Fox Business Network, siding with Trump, slamming Mitch McConnell.
There's one person in Washington, D.C. right now delivering on his promises. That man is President Donald J. Trump. And the rest, they are phony baloney. And ditch Mitch. Let's just start with ditch Mitch.
Start with ditch Mitch. Okay, that's not exactly the sound of harmony. And then Sean Hannity, Fox News, of course, kind of joined at the hip with the president. But here he was really laying it on.
So, Senator McConnell, my message to you. If all you're going to do is whine like a 10-year-old and complain and make excuses and blame the president for your failure after 8 months of him now being in office and you have in the House and Senate, guess what? It really is time to drain the sewer and swamp.
Okay, Eliana Johnson is with us from Politico. Eliana, what are those commentators reflecting here? Who is the base of the Republican Party now? Is it the core that brought Donald Trump to power? Is it something else? Is that a fiction?
Well, the complicated thing is that party bases are not they're not composed of a single type of voter. So Trump brought a new type of voter into the party, a largely white, male, blue-collar voters. But there still are many rank-and-file traditional Republican voters whose interests are somewhat different. And these people are at odds. And the Democratic Party is the same. There are union voters and minorities and all different types of voters whose interests are very different. And what I think we're seeing now is these interests, butt heads. And, the interesting thing about Trump and McConnell, I think, is that these guys are so stylistically different. And both of them are right. I mean, it's sort of a silly playground fight. But Trump is not wrong to be frustrated, I think, that Republicans had 7 years to unify behind a single health care plan for repeal and replace, and that it should have been teed up for him to sign into law when he got there. That really isn't Trump's fault. And Mitch McConnell is not wrong, I think, to criticize Trump for expecting things to move slightly faster. His style is really slow and steady wins the race, and that's clearly not the president's style. But, it's a case, I think, when you see kids fighting on the playground of they're both right.
But you've got this Gallup poll, and yes, the president is down a new low for him. But among Republicans, he's still got 79% approval, down from 82%, but still 79%. That sounds like a lot, doesn't it?
I'm not sure how great a 79% approval rating among voters in your own party is. I think you typically want to see that number a bit higher. And I still think, when Republicans are going to go out and in the Senate want to increase their majority, they're going to be looking for slightly stronger numbers.
So that may not be enough. They're watching. And then comes Charlottesville. There was a lot of talk about this over the weekend. I mean, there was a firestorm straight up about this. Does that matter to Republicans in a lasting way? Or even there, the president's now come out and he said the words, I guess that people wanted to hear on Saturday, some of them anyway. Is that enough? Is this a rip up the contract kind of a problem for the Republicans on Capitol Hill and the president or not?
That absolutely matters to Republicans. I think many people saw Saturday as the worst day of the Trump presidency by far, and he began bleeding support. It was fascinating to me. We really saw editorial pages and politicians across the political spectrum, but particularly on the right, slam this president. You know, the president's favorite hometown newspaper, the New York Post, laid into him. That's Rupert Murdoch's paper. Rupert Murdoch is in touch with the president all the time. But they pointed out in an editorial that Trump is somebody who is no holds bar when it comes to criticizing his enemies, and he couldn't summon up some Trumpian phrases for these white nationalists who had rallied in Charlottesville. He took an enormous amount of criticism from fellow Republicans over the weekend. And I think from talking to several White House advisors that they knew immediately there was enormous blowback to the statement he made on Saturday. This is something I think that's tremendously important to Republicans.
Do they see a real difference between Republican wedge politics on a race over many decades and what the president didn't say, or the sort of dynamic of the president's comments on Saturday?
Absolutely. I think for Republicans, and I think they would say the same about Democrats, when people are claiming to be a part of your movement and claiming to support you, it is all the more important for you to name them and to disavow them. And we've seen that. Ronald Reagan did that. George H.W. Bush did that. Bob Dole did that. You know, when the Ku Klux Klan was claiming their support, they specifically disavowed that. And that's why what the president did was such a break with political precedent and so startling to Republicans.
Support for this podcast and the following message comes from ZipRecruiter, who understands when you run a business, you've got important decisions to make every day, like hiring. ZipRecruiter makes finding quality candidates simple. With one click at ZipRecruiter.com/OP, you can post your job to 100 leading job sites across the web and manage your candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to hire. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/OP.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Donald Trump and the GOP, the Republican Party, how they fit together, whether they stick together after Charlottesville, the healthcare flameout, hard words, tensions with Congress. You can join us this hour. Do you see President Trump and the GOP as one in the same? Was Trump's early equivocation on Charlottesville of his own making? Was it a GOP construction, something new, something different? Do you think Mitch McConnell sees Donald Trump as an ally, a wild card, a potential enemy? Ileana Johnson is with us, national political reporter for Politico, all kinds of commentary over the weekend. And before, I mean, last week, before all that blew up, the president was asked whether he would ever ask Senate Majority Leader, Republican Mitch McConnell, to step down. Talk about equivocal. Here he was.
Well, I'll tell you what. If he doesn't get repeal and replace done, and if he doesn't get taxes done, meaning cuts and reform, and if he doesn't get a very easy one to get done, infrastructure, if he doesn't get them done, then you can ask me that question.
Not exactly buddy-buddy. And then came Charlottesville. On Fox News Sunday, Republican Senator Lindsey Graham said the president needed to do more to call out white supremacy.
I would urge the president to dissuade them of the fact that he's sympathetic to their cause, because their cause is hate. It is un-American. They are domestic terrorists. And we need more from our president on this issue.
There is tension there. There's history as well. Where does this go? Ileana, please stand by there in Washington. Charlie Sykes joins us right now from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Author, political commentator. He was a big conservative radio talk show voice in Wisconsin for years until late last year. He left his show after becoming a big opponent of Donald Trump's campaign. That alienated some of his listeners. But here he is with a long history looking at conservatism in the GOP, now in a different place. He's got a new book coming out soon, How the Right Lost Its Mind, coming out in October. Commentator now for MSNBC, Charlie Sykes, welcome back to On Point.
Good to be with you.
What do you see happening between the president and the Republican Party?
Well, nothing that's happening should come as a surprise. I mean, Donald Trump was never really a Republican. He was never a conservative. He's a man fundamentally without political principles, and his idea of loyalty only goes one way. What you're seeing playing out was really very, very predictable, and yet the Republican Party made a Faustian bargain. They basically said, okay, we're going to overlook his character. We're going to overlook his ideology, his personality, his conduct, you know, the way he talks about women. We're going to overlook all of that because he will be the president who will sign our agenda into law. We can use him. We can tame him. We can somehow control him. And I think the realization has been growing on a virtually daily basis that this is not happening, that he is not making a pivot to being presidential, that he's not a team player, that he's not going to provide leadership, that in fact he's very, very comfortable. Well, let me put it this way. Harry Truman said, the buck stops here. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump has made it clear, don't blame me. If something goes wrong, I will always have somebody else to blame. And this week it's Mitch McConnell. Keep in mind that his attacks on Mitch McConnell are kind of a break from the animus between you know, the Trump world and Paul Ryan, which will reemerge at some point. So yeah, I think everybody put a happy face on a forced marriage, and I think we're seeing the consequences.
What about their agenda? His agenda, Charlie?
Well, this is the question. What exactly is his agenda? Now, I do think that, you know, when you're talking about ripping up the contract, I think what you'll see is that Republicans in Congress will go ahead with their own specific agenda on taxes without looking very closely, without tacking very closely with what the White House wants. I think on health care, for example, Donald Trump, I think he made it clear he didn't really care what was in the legislation. He didn't know what was in the legislation. He showed no interest in the policy, and he was willing to sign anything they would send him.
Eliana, what about the Faustian bargain? If that's what it was, overlook a lot of things that made people uncomfortable because the agenda was sitting there and they could push it through. What do you hear from Capitol Hill? Are they still optimistic that with their own votes and somehow harnessing the president's popularity with his base and more, that they can do that?
I think that was true about the Faustian bargain. I think many lawmakers, as well as Republican voters, not all Republican mm-hmm. voters were crazy about Trump. And I think many saw him as a person of bad character who was somebody who would sit behind the Oval Office desk and appoint judges and sign Republican legislation. Mm-hmm. But I think the optimism is dimming because what Congress has shown is that it's incapable of getting legislation to his desk. And so I think there are real questions about how productive this administration can be because, there was some original optimism between Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan that they would drive this legislative train and Trump mm-hmm. would be there to sign it. But I think what they're learning is that you really do need an engaged and competent executive branch to work with the legislative branch to make this thing work. And the executive branch, the president, has not been engaged enough in the legislative process to do that.
And then, Charlie, comes Charlottesville and the president's long, terrible pause before he comes out and explicitly condemns neo-Nazism, the KKK, white nationalism, everything we saw on the streets there. What is the significance of that in this relationship, Charlie?
Well, again, this was a pattern. Over and over again during the campaign, he was given opportunities to distance himself from the alt-right, and to the extent he ever did it, it was always grudging. And his relationship, his coziness with the alt-right, which by the way is a euphemism for white supremacy, white nationalism, is really a cancer on the presidency, and it's going to be a cancer on the Republican Party if they do not deal with it forcefully. And I think there was a recognition of that this was not a one-off. That here is a president who has had a winking relationship with these very, very extreme elements from the far right that many of us had thought had been excommunicated, had been shoved off into the fringes. And throughout the Trump campaign, he enabled them, he empowered them. The fact that he named Steve Bannon to a senior position in the White House, somebody who had who bragged that he had created a platform for the alt-right, mm-hmm. Was really, I think, a decisive moment in the Trump campaign. and unfortunately a blot on the Republican Party that this was one of the things they were willing to overlook. But I do think that the strength of the response that you saw over the weekend, you've played some of the soundbite, is a recognition that this is one of those moments where the Republican Party has absolutely, from a moral position as well as a political position, must distance itself from Trump, Trump world, and the alt-right.
Of course, the party wasn't born yesterday. There's history here. Charlie Sykes, please stand by in Milwaukee. Eliana Johnson in Washington. Lots of callers for the two of you. Let's take one right from Charlottesville, Virginia. Bryce is calling. Hi, Bryce. You're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Tom, thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate the program you're running today because I think it's really important for analyzing what is currently the party in charge of American government. And that party is really coming apart at the seams. And it really looks like there's a breaking point that's come up really brightly since 2010 when you had on one side implicit unspoken or at least dog-whistled racism and explicit anti-justice views of the party that have been part of the party for years. And so now we have the party of Bush and Boehner on one side and the party of Steve Bannon and Rush Limbaugh on the other. And what we're seeing right now in Charlottesville with Trump not able to denounce white supremacists is essentially, or now that he has, but delaying in denouncing white supremacists is it's allowing this narrative, these white nationalists, to take over the party, which after years of dog whistling from even just Reagan era or Goldwater era Republicans, to turn that dog whistle into a bullhorn. Years and years and years of collaboration by the Koch brothers, Fox News, the right-wing talk radio has been just flagrant fear-mongering with an incredible hostility to facts, and largely fed by just one moral and one moral only, and that is to take money from programs that provide for people in need and to give tax cuts to the wealthiest people in this country.
But Bryce, let me go to your big point about white nationalism and the Republican Party. And Eliana, let me bring it to you. Bryce is in Charlottesville, and he sees the white nationalists taking over the GOP. Charlie sees them, as an outlier that has made inroads. How do you see the dynamic here, Eliana?
Yeah, I think it's easy to have the impression that they're taking over the party because they're certainly the loudest and most visible minority, and they get an enormous amount of media attention. And I think it's easy to confuse that with the impression that they're taking over the party.
Steve Bannon is in the White House. Steve Miller is in the White House.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I think that's why so many Republicans and conservatives have begun denouncing Trump and distanced themselves from the party because they're very alarmed by that. But this goes back to my question: is what exactly is the Republican Party? You know, is it Trump or is it Republicans in Congress? I think that's difficult to define. But I certainly do think that. Look, if you were to count these people and compare them to the number of Republican voters who supported Trump, they're in absolute numbers a pretty small, though vocal, minority. And yes, it's true that Steve Bannon and Stephen Miller in the White House, you can argue about how their views stack up to those of the people marching in Charlottesville. I happen not to think that they're comparable. But look, I think what happened with the Trump election was that it revealed that there are that he had a pretty formidable following, and that was something that frightened a lot of Republicans into realizing that a lot of their supporters or that the composition of the party was a little bit different in many ways, not just in this way, but that the ideological composition of the party was somewhat different than they had realized.
Charlie Sykes, Steve Bannon and Stephen Miller, not comparable to what we saw on the streets. I mean, as you say, Steve Bannon says, I created this great platform for the alt-right. You know, I think Breitbart made a columnist of Richard Spencer, who's a big figure there. Are they really not comparable, or are they of a piece?
Well, there's a continuum there. They empowered them. They enabled them. They obviously felt that they were a significant part of the Trump base. You get a sense over the weekend that Steve Bannon might have been whispering in the president's ear, don't call them out by name. Don't antagonize them, because even though they're a relatively small number of them, they're crucial. They're part of the nucleus. And we may need them at some point. And this is a president who is clearly obsessed with keeping the support of his base. But I do want to push back a little bit on mm-hmm. some of the things the caller said. And this is a complicated situation. I mean, obviously, the Republican Party has been ignoring, you know, some of the implications of its policies. But it is important to make distinctions. It is important to say that not all conservatives are going to be embracing this kind of white nationalism. You know, and one of the key moments in the conservative movement was back in the 1960s when William F. Buckley Jr. Essentially excommunicated the John Birch Society. It was not because he was not anti-communist. Buckley, of course, was very anti-communist. But he recognized that the Birch Society represented an extremist element that would taint the entire conservative movement. So there are these moments where I think conservatives and Republicans need to say, okay, this is different. And I do think it's important for people to recognize that we are in a different moment here.
But take another moment, Charlie. If you want to look at history, go to Ronald Reagan in Mississippi, 1984, stage decked with mm-hmm. Confederate flags, and he says, the South will rise again. I mean, there's another moment, not exactly the William F. Buckley moment.
Well, let me just turn this around and say that part of the problem that I think people on the left and the right have experienced over the last year is the fact that conservatives have been accused of being racist for now, you know, 40, 50 years. And at a certain point, if everybody is a racist, the term loses its impact.
I didn't say but I do ask you about that moment and what you make of that. There were, you know, Lee Atwater was in there, and there were a lot of deliberate wedge politics at work. Are those coming home to roost somehow here?
Well, Ronald Reagan is not a Nazi, and Ronald Reagan is not
again,
a supporter
not,
of the Ku Klux
I'm not
Klan.
Saying that.
And Ronald Reagan did not have a problem calling out the extremists. This is where the distinctions between certain kinds of politics. And again, is there any doubt that the Republican Party had a Southern strategy? No, not at all. This was, you know, they clearly have, you know, transformed their electorate here. But again, I do think that what happened, I think, last year, and I experienced it as a conservative, was when you'd say, okay, look, this is the alt-right. These guys are white nationalists. They are racists. They are bigots. That a lot of people said, oh, you know what? We've heard this over and over and over again. This is what they said about George Bush. This is what they said about Mitt Romney. This is what they said about John McCain. So there is a point where I do think it's important to say, look, draw the line here and recognize that what is being empowered and enabled is something genuinely ugly. Yes, there are the whole country has a fraught relationship with race. But up until very recently, I think that we were united in saying that there was a line that you did not cross, that you did not go beyond. And I think that people like Steve Bannon and now the president have erased that line, you know, turned a blind eye to something that was genuinely ugly that we thought was not part of our, you know, the political mainstream. And, you know, unfortunately, but again, this distinction is important for people to draw.
GOP riding a tiger now. Lucy in Churchville, Maryland. Lucy, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm really enjoying this show. My point is that the Republicans touted themselves as the party of Lincoln, but I think that they're going to pay a heavy price for getting in bed with the devil with Trump. They're no longer the party of Lincoln. They're going to be known for decades to come as the party of Trump. And I feel like for Republicans, maybe his base is the alt-right, but all the Republicans that voted for Trump just to vote party over country, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem.
Why party of Trump? Maybe that's just, maybe it's a passing chapter here, Lucy.
Well, it's not going to be a quick turn. Trump is like he's a different animal, and we all know that. And the Republicans have put someone in the White House who is dangerous, who is literally our country is standing still, if not going backwards, for these 4 years. I cannot believe that he will be reelected. I didn't believe he would be elected, so that says something there. But we're at a standstill. This is not just a blip in the road. For a lot of Democrats, you know, we had trouble with George Bush. I would actually give my right arm to have George Bush back in the White House.
Lucy, I appreciate your call. We're up against a break right here, but thank you for calling from Maryland. Charlie Sykes, buyer's remorse in GOP ranks right now, or that 79% approval rating says maybe not?
Well, I certainly hope there's some buyer's remorse, people recognizing what, in fact, they've associated themselves with. The caller's right. Unless the Republican Party pushes back, they will carry this taint for a generation or more.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking about Donald Trump and the GOP this hour, how they fit together, whether they stick together after Charlottesville, the healthcare flameout, hard words, tensions with Congress. Eliana Johnson with Politico is with us from Washington. Charlie Sykes is here from Milwaukee, was a big conservative radio commentator there for a long time. Late last year, no more. Definitely no to Donald Trump. How the Right Lost Its Mind is his book coming out in October. You can join the conversation this hour. What do you think? Is Mitch McConnell looking at Donald Trump as an ally these days? A wild card? A potential enemy? Could Trump still go his own way? Break with the GOP somehow? Would the GOP ever break with him? Shift to Pence or someone else? Show him out of office? Democrats certainly ready to make hay over the weekend. Plenty of that. Arizona Democratic Congressman Ruben Gallego was on MSNBC yesterday, saying that the people President Trump has surrounded himself with could be seen as encouraging racism.
Well, look at who's in his administration. You have Stephen Miller, who is regarded within the white nationalist movement as being akin to all of them. You have Steve Bannon, who's the head of, was the head of Breitbart, which actually helped stoke a lot of this alt-right movement, started actually, and it only continues to push these racist themes. You have Sebastian Gorka, who is regarded as an actual Nazi in Europe. And that's only what I know off the top of my head. And we could even go further if you look at even Attorney General Sessions, who doesn't have a really good history when it comes to race relations.
And that's before the campaign season really kicks off. Republicans with unease of their own, even before all of this, you had Arizona Republican Senator Jeff Flake. Now, he's got his own angle on all this. But here he was in NBC's Meet the Press on August 6th thing, saying he's worried about the direction of the GOP.
I am concerned at the direction that the party's going, protectionism in particular, kind of an anti-immigrant fervor, those kind of things, I don't think are going to propel Republicans into the future. I think demographics are against us in that regard, and I think that we've got to do something different.
Well, what will that be? And will it be the Trump way? Joe in Colquitt, Oklahoma. Joe, thank you very much for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, I probably shouldn't have called. You know, I don't have any business speaking to politics because I'm politically ignorant. But I've listened to all this talk about the White House, how racist it is, and Trump being racist and all this stuff. And it just takes me back to when Obama was president, and they have pictures of Obama there with Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson in the background. These guys were racist haters. They were just as bad as any white that's walking on the face of the earth. They just don't organize the same way.
I mean, Joe, and, you know, they've stood up for civil rights, Jesse Jackson, for a long time. Does that make him a hater? I mean, they didn't go out on the street with assault rifles.
Well, you know, they had feelings about civil rights, but they exercised their rights violently. That's a fact.
No, I don't think that is a fact. Jesse Jackson was not out, you know, beating people up or leading people beating people up.
There's just as many black hate groups as there is white hate groups. And, you know, I just would like for everybody to shoot down the middle.
Listen, I'm for calling it like it is, Joe, but I just don't think that if you really look at what's out there, you're going to find that that is actually the case. Just as many black hate groups as white hate groups. I mean, I certainly don't see that on the streets, even though you got plenty of protests. Is protesting for civil rights the same as racial or white nationalism? Joe, I appreciate it. Let us look at it. Charlie Sykes, how do you respond to Joe?
Well, you know, this is a thing that you get from Trump world. I call it whataboutism, where, you know, rather than defend something, you say, well, what about something on the left, the excesses of the left? You know, and I think at some point we do need to have a discussion about, you know about extremism in general on race.
But violent racism and truth matters, too, beyond whataboutism.
Well, it does. And, you know, and Al Sharpton's, his background is somewhat problematic, you know, given his relationship with, you know, in New York. But again, there is no moral.
You're
going
to equate him with Nazi?
No, I am not. But I'm just saying that this is the kind of response that you will get. Will be the whataboutism. People will make these points. But of course, there is no moral equivalence to Nazis, to the Klan, to the white supremacists. And this is again why the distinctions are important. To simply say, well, the other side, and this is why what the president said was what Trump said on Saturday was so appalling. The, you know, on many sides, as if there were many equivalents of the Nazis, the Ku Klux Klan, the white supremacists, the white nationalists, because that is not true. And that is not the case. And I think that was why there was so much blowback. But do not be surprised if in a lot of conservative media, on talk radio, you hear exactly the kind of point that caller made.
Yeah. Joe, I appreciate your call. Even so, I want to go to Rick Perlstein right now in Chicago. Historian, author, wrote The Invisible Bridge, The Fall of Nixon, The Rise of Reagan, Before the Storm, about Barry Goldwater, Nixon Land, The Rise of a President, The Fracturing of America. Rick Perlstein, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
You've been watching Republican Party history for a long time, and now here comes President Trump, Donald Trump, into the midst of it. And this weekend in Charlottesville in particular. What do you see in the arc here? Is it bending in a new direction? Is there something different going on?
Well, there's always been an enormous amount of, call it white reactionary rage in America. And it's not that all conservatives are racists, but conservatives can't win without the racists. They've always understood that. And Eliana at the beginning talked about the startling break that Trump represents. And really the break is that previous Republican leaders have been very skilled at kind of surgically, almost with a laser scalpel, cutting out the tumor of the most demonstrable racists like the Ku Klux Klan. The problem is that by the time Trump came along, we weren't just talking about a tumor. We were talking about a metastatic cancer. And it's important not just to talk about racism. It's easy to say we hate people who are white supremacists. The white supremacists have a whole thought world that Trump shares that involves conspiratism. You know, the idea that there's this diabolical conspiracy out to get the ordinary people. And, you know, they share this conspiracy theory with, for example, the National Rifle Association, which is, you know, putting out videos from people like Dana Loesch that project the idea that sort of white people all across America are defending themselves from mobs that want to, you know, rape their daughters. And, you know, once we start seeing the Republican Party distance themselves and denounce the National Rifle Association, then maybe we'll be seeing some, you know, real healing, some real kind of chemotherapy, if you will. But up to that point, we have this kind of dangerous game that's been developing, you know, ever since the Republican Party nominated as their presidential candidate a fellow, Barry Goldwater, who only a few weeks earlier had voted against civil rights for, you know, the freedom to use public accommodations across the country. It's a structural problem that will take far more than excising a Donald Trump or a Steve Bannon to fix.
Eliana, could Donald Trump do some kind of backflip here? I mean, we're reading all these headlines now about Steve Bannon being in limbo at the White House. Maybe his position there not secure. Is there a chance Trump would jettison him, Scaramucci style, and find some new relationship with the rest of the party?
Donald Trump could do a lot of things, but I think it's very unlikely that he's going to fundamentally change. And I think it's important to note that Steve Bannon is not on the ropes in the White House because of his political views or because he's given aid and comfort to the alt-right or anti-Semites or racists in the Republican Party. He's on the ropes because he spent an enormous amount of time in the White House stabbing his colleagues in the back and bringing out the worst in the president. Those are the sorts of things that get people fired in the Trump White House, tends not to be their substantive political views.
Jody in Smithville, Tennessee. Jody, thank you for calling. You're on.
Thank you. We have a United States Constitution because brave men died for the right cause, and many of them did not live to enjoy the freedom that they fought so hard to gain. I would just love to know, at what point will the Republicans go on record and stand up to defend these honorable people who die to maintain our freedom?
What do you mean, Jody? What would that look like to you? What do you mean exactly?
What would that look like? Well, Sebastian Gorka wore that Russian medal to the White House. Then you've got Steve Bannon on the alt-right in the media. Then you've got when the FBI director was fired, and then the very next night, Donald Trump passed the Russians into the White House. And none of this is appalling, and none of them are calling for an impeachment. I don't understand the logic. I don't know what they're thinking or why they're thinking.
Jody, let us pick it up right there. Charlie, you sort of went never Trump in last December. Is there a divorce possible here or not with the party and the president?
Well, of course it's possible, you know, particularly when you realize that a lot of the alt-right ideology is a real, you know, fundamental rejection of you know, the conservative belief, for example, that America is a nation founded on an idea. You know, they reject
equality.
All of that. No, right, exactly. You know, but is a divorce possible? Look, you're not going to see that until the Trump base breaks with him. And given our incredibly tribalized politics, given the alt-reality media that he can call upon, that's going to be very, very difficult. On the other hand, you are seeing more principled conservatives. You mentioned Jeff Flake, Cory Gardner, others, Lindsey Graham, John McCain, who are, I think, becoming more emboldened to speak out against this, you know, particularly with some of the things involving Russia, because I'm old enough to remember when conservative Republicans actually, you know, would have put country before party and recognized Russia as a geopolitical threat. But I think it would be naive to think that they are going to turn on him to the extent that there's going to be impeachment, you know, barring some flaming, smoking gun. Because, you know, Richard Nixon did not enjoy, by the way, the kind of media support and tribal politics that Donald Trump can call upon.
Rick, I heard you there.
Yeah, the caller brings up the subject of patriotism, and it's an important one. The fact of the matter is Confederate symbols, which started this whole thing, have been defended by Southern Republicans for three generations now. And when you talk about Confederate symbols, you are literally talking about people who took up arms in treason against the United States to defend slavery. And you look at the platform of the Mississippi Republican Party in the 1960s, it literally called for separation of the races. You know, Richard Nixon went down there and endorsed it. You know, Ronald Reagan shows up with Confederate flags and says that he's for states' rights, something he never said in any other place other than a few miles away from where the Klan murdered civil rights workers. You can't easily repair a party that has built its entire structure on appealing to those kinds of anti-American sentiments.
Diana in Amherst, Massachusetts. Diana, you're on.
Thank you for taking my call, Tom. I want to point out the fact that we can pretend there are big divisions in the Republican Party, but in fact, they're getting exactly what they want. They are doing two things that will keep us far to the right, to my dismay. One of them is the fact that they are doing voter suppression means. The other is they have appointed more federal judges during the short time that Trump has been in office, and that means that decisions that come down will foster a right turn to our government. And I think it's very frightening because it's going to make us or could make us more like a fascist country. So those are the two things that concern me greatly.
Diana, thank you for calling. Eliana, is it possible that Diana sees the whole country here has kind of gone with the Trump negotiating strategy we've all read about, you know, is go utterly maximal at the beginning, and then, you know, you'll end up more toward your side than the other guys. Are we in the midst of that here? I mean, even over the weekend, move the goalposts and then, you know, inch back a little bit, but the whole country's moved his way.
To say that the Republican Party is getting what it wants doesn't quite make sense to me, because there really wasn't a single Republican elected leader who wanted Donald Trump to be president. I actually think that Trump's views in many ways were out of sync with the reigning ideology of the Republican Party, in particular his views on entitlements and so forth. But I think that he did make Republican leaders realize that many of the Reagan era orthodoxies were due for a revamp.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in that sense, rather in the sense that the caller spoke of, that I think he made Republican leaders aware that the Republican base was changing in some ways that were startling to them. And, you know, in some ways, I don't think Republicans have learned their lessons. If, you know, Republicans have campaigned really on tax cuts and entitlement reform and so on, and those weren't totally the things that Trump campaigned on. He was a much more, I think, culturally traditional, even though, of course, he's not a cultural traditionalist in his person, but he's a much more culturally traditional and kind of a social throwback candidate than traditional rank and file elected Republican leaders, and less of an economic conservative. And I don't think that the rest of the party has sort of caught up with the fact that there's a real market for that.
Charlie, our time is very short. Does this Trump GOP hybrid hang together? Does it become Trump? Does it break apart?
It can't really hang together forever because, you know, in contrary to what the caller said, the party really is divided. The question is whether they will.
She's not wrong. They've got the voting steps that they're implementing and judges on the bench.
Well, that is true. But on the other hand, this is a marriage that simply cannot last. And so far, we've seen the Republican Party behaving like they have come down with a case of the Stockholm syndrome. But maybe they will find their backbone and their principles. We have to hope so.
Rick Perlstein, I've got to have you back to go deeper on the history here and how it's playing out with us right up in front of us right now. We're really grateful to you for being with us today, author of The Invisible Bridge, The Fall of Nixon and the Rise of Reagan and Before the Storm and Nixon Land. Rick Perlstein, thanks very much. Come again. We've got more to say. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
Charles Sykes with us from Milwaukee today. How the Right Lost His Mind, coming out in October. Charlie Sykes, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much.
And Eliana Johnson at Politico. Thank you as always, Eliana.
Thanks so much.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.